Trying to grab all the groceries in one trip? Oof, not how you would have done that. You know sometimes less is more. Like when you drive less and save with the USAA annual mileage discount. USAA, get a quote today.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Madeira, and today we have a guest, Sean Needham, on the Dr. Madeira Show. How's it going today, Sean?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're back on the show. We have talked about other things in the past and compounding pharmacy and the benefits of testosterone applied topically. And today you're back to talk about your book, which is awesome. It's called Sickened: How the Government Ruined Healthcare and How to Fix It. So for those of you who don't know Sean, he's a compounding pharmacist, and him and his wife are the owners of Moses Lake Professional Pharmacy in Moses Lake, Washington. It's essentially in central Washington states. And he's also radio show and podcast host of Health Solutions with Sean and Janet Needham. So you all should tune into that radio show as well. And that's on Mondays, correct?
That's correct. Mondays at 1 to 2 p.m. We're live on AM 1470 KBSN. Along with streaming live on Facebook and YouTube.
Spectacular. Yeah, and you guys are doing an hour and a half now, or is it still an hour as it was last year?
An hour, correct.
Okay.
And we're looking at maybe going to 2 hours, and we'd like to do that. We have a lot of content and a lot of guests on. We're booking out guests into July now. And it's just super exciting. Our radio show has been so fun, and we have a passion for it, and it's just about educating and empowering patients and people across the nation regarding, you know, all things healthcare. And I've been wanting to do that for years, and it just, you know, it's been a great platform.
That's spectacular. Yeah, I've been following you in your posts from the show on Instagram, so everybody can follow you there too as well, which is really awesome to see. There's a lot of, I mean, you have a great variety of guests too. So that's spectacular for the general public's education.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. We try to mix it up. We, you know, even though at our pharmacy, Moses Lake Professional Pharmacy, we specialize in hormone replacement mostly. We wanted to have a variety of guests, whether it comes to nutrition and exercise and diet and all kinds of opinions. I mean, there's people that are on our show that I don't necessarily agree with all their opinions, but I wanted to have a variety and having people with different opinions. So
spectacular. So tell me more about the book. When did you first start writing it, and when was it re-released? I believe it was released end of last year. Is that correct?
That is correct. Okay. So it was, you know, I've been in healthcare. I graduated from pharmacy school in 1994, so, you know, almost 26 years now. And so really, I tell people that it's, you know, the book was 20 plus years in the thinking, but it was 5 years in the making. So I realized that, so about 5 years ago in 2015, I started writing the book. And I know my camera just went off, Sam. I'm going to take a break and turn my camera back on, okay?
No worries.
It pauses after 30 minutes to do, it's crazy. Let's see, it probably already went off, so I can't turn on my phone. Maybe I can. Let's see if that works. There it is.
Yep.
Okay, so, and in 2015, I started writing the book, and, you know, I had just a bunch of notes and a bunch of ideas jotted down, and I just keep thinking of more, and I actually started writing the book, and I realized that I'm not a writer. I'm a pharmacist, and I need help. Mm-hmm. So I found somebody to help me write the book and actually put my words onto paper, and that was just a tremendous asset. I mean, I couldn't have done that without her. And, you know, so the words are mine, and she just put them on paper. And I wanted to launch it by the end of last year, and, you know, December, I think we had our official launch December 26th, right after Christmas. And it was just, it was incredible response. In fact, the Saturday after it was launched, there were 1,371 downloads. So wow. yeah, in one That's day. Awesome. And it was a record on Amazon. You know, there's a bunch of different categories that Amazon has books in, but it was a record in some categories. And so I was super proud of that. And I was, you know, a little bit concerned because obviously the topic is a little bit political. In some ways you can call it political. I mean, but I believe it's not necessarily political, it's just truth. I believe the book is truth. So I don't believe it's really political. Although our healthcare system is, I believe my book is truth. So I was kind of nervous about how people would respond to it a little bit because, mm-hmm. you know, some of my ideas might sound a little bit wild. One of the ideas is that, you know, I don't necessarily believe in traditional health insurance, and our pharmacy has been a cash only pharmacy, meaning we haven't billed insurance in our pharmacy since 2002. So for 18 years, we haven't billed insurance. And believe me, 18 years ago, that was a crazy notion. Our colleagues said we were crazy. Our employees said we were crazy. There were doctors that did not support us. They were, you know, saying, you know, bad things, necessarily bad things about us, but just some things that, you know, how can we do that and not bill insurance because we're not going to be supporting, you know, certain populations and all that. And my opinion was that, you know, insurance was making everything expensive and mm-hmm. kind of decreasing access. So I believed in a cash model that we could give better service at a lower price. And I still believe that. So, you know, there were some wild opinions out there that I had on my book so I didn't know how people would respond, but people respond very positively. Most of the reviews are positive. I'm okay with negative reviews. I'm totally okay with that. And there are some negative reviews because I have some pretty strong opinions and there are people that are in total opposite spectrum, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, still, you know, I'd like to have a hard copy of the book done by the end of the year and an audio version. I'm working on the audio version right now, and the hard copy we've kind of started working on, but, you know, it's definitely a process.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm excited for the audio version cause I like audio books, spent a lot of time driving around Seattle and road trips and stuff. So I'll look forward to that. I have your, book up in one of the apps that you can read books on cell phones, and I've been reading it. I've been really enjoying it, and I know it is, as you say, controversial because a lot of people today, and I think, and we can talk maybe more about the history that you mentioned in your book, so people can have that background in a second. But you know, it seemed like before and after the Affordable Care Act in recent history that it has really perpetuated this idea that someone or something, whether it's insurance, people's employers, is going to rescue them and save them from their own health problems. And people are still under the belief that their genetics are a curse and they're cursed by their genetics and has nothing to do with what they're doing every day with their lifestyle and putting in their bodies. And you know, some people just don't know how to be healthy, and I don't fault them for that. However, there's not a lot of personal responsibility in that model, which is one of the things you first mentioned in your book about your personal journey, your personal health journey of taking responsibility for your own health with a nutritional exercise plan and other things. And a lot of people seems like they don't always walk that hero's journey, so to speak, of optimizing their health, or it takes a lot for them to want to do that. It takes them already being diagnosed with a chronic health condition. And then it's pretty expensive already, right? Once they're
right.
already
right.
in the system.
Right. So. Well, yeah, So, there's a lot to take away from what you just said. And, I think in some ways you said you don't fault people. You don't really fault people for not knowing how to take care of themselves. And I agree with you. I think, you and I do this every day. So it comes natural to us. So I think that's one of the reasons I wrote a book. That's one of the reasons that gave me a reason to write a book, because I would talk to people about this kind of stuff. And they were just like, they were dumbfounded. They're like, well, I don't know. I went to the doctor and I had high blood pressure and he prescribed a medication and that's what I did. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, there are other options and my story is a good one. I had multiple disease states, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and I just needed to lose weight and change my lifestyle. And it changed my life for sure. I pretty much, from knowing the system and working in a sick care system, I pretty can much assure you that if I hadn't changed my lifestyle, I would not only be on high blood pressure medications and high cholesterol medications, but I would be having side effects from them. I would probably be on more medications now and just going down a bad road, knee pain, ankle pain, the gamut. And I don't think people realize by changing their lifestyle, how much they can affect their healthcare. So that's why it's important for doctors like yourself to have podcasts and to teach these things so we can educate and empower patients. That's one of the reasons I have a radio show, is so I can educate and empower people, that they have choices and they can make those changes. So a little bit on the history of where it kind of all started with the employer insurance. So, when I did write the book initially, I went back to the 1860s, because obviously the government's name is in it. And I wanted to kind of go back to when the government really got involved. But then I realized that, it was just probably I needed to refocus, even though I could go back to the 1860s and show you some stuff. Like, for instance, the USDA. The USDA was founded in the 1860s to protect our food supply. And of course, what came on later is the FDA. The FDA was under the USDA and they protected our drug supply. So that's a whole other story. In fact, I'm thinking about maybe writing a book about that, because a lot of people don't understand the history of the FDA, and they think that the pharmaceuticals that they produce, that they approve, are safe and effective. And so they just trust that of the government. And I just don't necessarily think that's always the case. So I decided to move forward and focus a little bit. And I focused in the book. It was in the 1930s under the FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration, where Social Security was first passed, Social Security Act. And the reason I talk about that is because that was one of the acts where the government really, people really, even if they weren't okay with it, it was the first step of the government taking care of people. And, fast forward 30 plus years later, in 1964, Medicare was passed. And when Medicare was passed, that's for sure when the government really got involved in our healthcare. But rewind back to the 1940s, and we talk about health insurance, and without health insurance, people that don't have traditional health insurance, in the media or the government, they want us to think that we're crazy. It's like, how can you not have health insurance? They think this health insurance stuff is so good. But the way it started was in the 1940s, post-World War II, or no, I'm sorry, during World War II, mm-hmm. there was a lot of wage inflation. And the government wanted to prevent inflation. So they put a cap on wages. So like if Ford wanted to hire somebody from General Motors, they couldn't pay him more money. They couldn't lure him away with more money. So they used hospital benefits. They said, well, if you or your family get sick, we'll pay for your hospitalization. And that was really the first step in individuals washing their hands of their own responsibility in healthcare and letting an employer take care of them. And it was, in my opinion, it was caused by the government, by a government regulation. And now fast forward, you know, 80 years later, and I mean, look at what we have. It's not just hospital insurance. We have, you know, patients that believe that their employer-sponsored health insurance should cover their doctor visit, their $15 blood pressure medication, their, you know, ingrown toenail. I mean, just name it. You know,
right.
And that's why healthcare is so expensive, because so many things are covered. It's not just a blanket, you know, it's not a major medical policy anymore. So, and because of government regulation, those are really hard to come by. So, you know, most typical individual people for a family would be paying $1,500 to $1,800 a month in insurance premiums to cover their family. Well, my personal opinion is, I mean, with my family, I decided that that just wasn't worth it. I wasn't getting anything out of it. I mean, that's $18,000 a year. And
yeah,
I mean, you know, that's a chunk of change for anybody. And even if your employer is paying for it, it might sound all good and dandy, but wouldn't you rather have the $18,000 yourself to decide where you want to put that? You'd be much better off. So, you know, that's another step in my book, is that, you know, individuals need to tell their employers, like, I don't want this health insurance. I want something different. You know, give me the money, give me a health savings account, put that money in a health savings account, you know, but, or put it in a matching 401k, something like that. But I don't want the health insurance. So, but the model, health insurance companies, the drug companies, the big, you know, hospitals, the big healthcare organizations, they love the model. It works great for them. And one of the reasons why is because they can bill for things that just aren't necessary. Big things, you know,
right.
Before the podcast started, we were talking about my grandma that had surgery when she was 80 years old. She was getting tired on the treadmill after 3 miles of walking. She's 80 years old. I mean, and the primary care doctor says, "Oh, Mrs. Crawford, yeah, you can't walk 4 miles and you get tired after 3 miles now instead of 4 miles. Well, it sounds like you have a leaky heart valve. Let me send you to the cardiologist. We have a new cardiology unit in town. They'll take care of you." His cardiologist said, "Oh yeah, Mrs. Crawford, you do. You have a leaky valve. And, you know, we have a new unit, cardiology unit here. We can put a new valve in you and, you know, Medicare will cover it. It won't cost you anything." And next thing you know, she does a surgery against my wish, against my opinion, against one of her son's opinions. And she codes, you know, which for those of you that don't know, that means she almost dies. They have to do CPR on her in the OR. She ends up in the ICU for 2 weeks, intensive care unit for 2 weeks, nursing home for, I don't know, like 90 days or something like that. All covered by Medicare with a surgery that should have never been done. Now, some might argue, it's like, well, did you just expect your grandma to die miserably? It's like, I think she probably died more prematurely because the surgery was done, honestly. And no, that's not it at all. She would have had to make some decisions. And if she would have had to pay for that, she would have had to make some decisions and say, you know what? I'm fine walking 3 miles a day. I'm 80 years old. I don't want to pay $250,000 for my surgery. Now, side note to that, the surgery, or I don't even know what the expense was, honestly, but it wouldn't have been that expensive if Medicare didn't cover it. That's why healthcare is so expensive, because somebody else pays the bill. So does that make sense?
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit more. Because what I've seen, because I have a direct care clinic in Seattle in Whitefish, Montana. And what I see when I offer direct lab pricing, for example, I think this might be an easier thing for me to talk about. And I want you to run with this after I mention it, is so let's say somebody gets like a complete blood count with platelets, white blood cell differential, comprehensive metabolic panel. That's like, you know, $15, maybe less, direct lab pricing, which is wholesale lab pricing for the listeners. When that's billed to insurance, we see that price go up about seven, multiply that by 7 to 11 times is kind of the average that I see, or the range, if you will. So we can say on average about 10 times that. And then doesn't the insurance in the lab or the insurance in the pharmaceutical company, they come to an agreement around billing? And then based on your insurance plan, the person is left with their copay of that lab or their copay of that medication. Is that basically what we're seeing with the insurance model here?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I've even heard, usually the typical number, Dr. Madera, is, I've heard, is about tenfold. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and people don't realize. So, and we get it, we don't get it all the time. You might get some of it, but we hear stories of this where, you know, somebody says, well, I want to use my insurance. And so, like, for instance, let's say you have somebody in your clinic that has insurance, but they pay you cash. And this happens quite often in a lot of the direct care clinics. And you say, okay, if you pay cash for these labs, it's going to be $15. If I can send them to you through your insurance, and they're going to bill $150. Who knows what you're going to have to pay? We don't know. It might be 20% of that. It might be, you know, they say it's covered. I want it covered. And then, so you send it to them, you send it to that lab, they bill $150 and it's covered for sure. And the patient ends up paying $50. And these are small numbers. I mean, imagine if something was thousands of dollars, you know? So instead of paying the $15 they could have and just be out the door done, they ended up paying $50, but it was covered in their insurance. Happens with medications all the time, especially generic medications. People go through their insurance and they get a 30-day supply for, you know, a $15 copay, where if they paid cash, they could get a 100-day supply for $17. I'm just using an example.
Wow.
You know, so they'd be way better off, way better off. And Dr. Keith Smith from the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, I've met him, I've toured the surgery center. He's had a cash-only surgery center since 1997, a pioneer in this area. He got fed up with the insurance government mess, so he did his own clinic. People from all over the world come to see him. Why? Because hospital in Georgia, he gives a great example of this. Hospital in Georgia, surgery, $40,000. Surgery Center of Oklahoma, $4,000. I mean, no-brainer.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you could argue, because this is what some people argue, and there's lots of stories about this. Oh, well, I'll just go to the local hospital in Georgia because it's my insurance covers it. Great. Yeah, your insurance covers 80%. 80% of you're responsible for 20%. So that surgery is going to cost you $8,000. Or you could go to the Surgery Center of Oklahoma and pay four. It's a no-brainer. And multiple stories like that. And that's one of the things in my book I talk about, that patients need to pay cash for healthcare services and negotiate them. So when you go to a doctor's clinic and they say, oh, I don't give cash discounts. I don't give any cash discounts. We bill insurance. And what insurance do you have? Oh, you don't have insurance. Okay, well, no, we don't give cash discounts. Then you go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what happens in insurance in clinics that bill insurance is they cost shift, because those insurance companies don't pay full price. They don't pay the $150 like you're talking about with the lab. They don't pay that. They've negotiated some lowball price that they pay, so they don't pay that full price. So why should a consumer paying cash pay full price? That's why I got out of the insurance system billing in my pharmacy, because I believe it discriminates against people paying cash. It is not fair to people who are uninsured. You want to talk about discrimination in healthcare? Then you talk about the model that it discriminates against uninsured. What is uninsured? Uninsured are a lot of people that are self-employed, a lot of people that might have some kind of catastrophic healthcare insurance with a huge deductible, or they might have a health sharing ministry or a health sharing program where most of their stuff is paid out of pocket. You literally rip those people off when you bill insurance, because you are charging the cash patient more than what the insurance company pays. And the cash patient pays you a lot faster than what the insurance company does. And you don't have to dot your I's. You don't have to cross your T's. It's literally a scam. In my opinion, the insurance model is a real scam in healthcare, and people need to know about it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more there. I have a personal story, not really anything serious medical for me, but I needed to go to the ER to get something removed out of my ankle after a backpacking trip. And it was actually an agave thorn needle.
Really?
Yeah. And I tried, because I have some background as an EMT, so I tried removing it myself with some sterile means at home, and it was just too deep. So I went to the ER in Arizona, where I was living at the time. This is about 18, maybe 16 years ago. And I was in college, so, you know, basically unemployed. I had a job like 10 hours a week or something. But I went to the hospital, and the nurse practitioner tried to remove it, but he got scared because of the nerves that were near. There are a lot of nerves and vessels that go through your ankle, and it's a relatively small area. So I ended up going to a local herb shop and getting a bunch of herbs. And this is the beginning of me learning about natural medicine, herbal medicine. And I'd been seeing naturopathic doctors for years, but for my own education. And I did like an herbal foot soak while studying for, you know, my pre-med classes. And in about 15 minutes after this soak, sitting there reading a book in my kitchen, the thorn just came out in this foot soak. And that cost me maybe $20 of herbs. And the ER visit, they messed up the billing, and it was billed to, you know, you're still on your parents' insurance when you're, you know, 18, 20 years old in some cases. And they messed up the billing. It was this big ordeal, and it was like $1,200, you know.
Yeah.
And they didn't even finish the job, much less. It was just ridiculous price. I mean, it should have been maybe $500 or $300. But case in point, you know, I've had other experiences where I've had to go to the ER for stitches, which in a direct primary care clinic would have cost $25, $45, and the bill is $2,000.
Yeah.
From the ER, and there's a $200 facility fee for you sitting,
yep,
for an hour in the ER. So it's very inflated. Going back to the history of insurance, didn't this all begin with the insurance industry trying to compete with the workers' compensation with the hospitals in the U.S.?
You know, I mean, that is a great question, Dr. Madeira. I am not familiar with that. I mean, if you have some insight on that, I would love to hear about it. I'd love to do more research on it too.
Yeah, I think I found like a historical educational video that was mentioning that in the beginning with insurance in the U.S. that hospitals were so expensive. So insurance was created so the employees of the hospital could use the hospital as needed.
Interesting. Yeah.
And I think Blue Cross Blue Shield, Premera, now it's called Premera Blue Cross Blue Shield, but Blue Cross Blue Shield was one of the first private insurers. Is that right? One of them?
Yeah, that I know of. Yeah, there. For sure. And they're still, obviously, they're still one of the biggest players.
Yeah. So as far as Medicare and Medicare kind of being the template or example for insurance billing, and Medicare for All being kind of a public political discussion right now, how do you address this in your book, and what is your opinion about Medicare for All? Can it coexist with direct primary care clinics? Should it ever be part of the solution? Yes or no, and why?
Yeah, so I don't specifically address Medicare for All in my book. I mean, that'd be almost another book in itself, which is always fun to think about, because let me tell you, once you think you're done writing a book, you're just getting started once you release it, because you want to add stuff and edit stuff and then write more things, and so, which is very, very good. But going back to the government ruining things, you know, here's a good example of what Medicare for All, of what Medicare did in the 60s when it was, and this, there's a story of this in my book. So after Medicare was released, within a few years, nursing home utilization was up 700%. Okay, let me re-say that. Nursing home visits were up 700%. Okay, I don't think it was necessarily because all of a sudden people needed more nursing homes. It was that Medicare and Medicaid covered nursing homes, so people utilize the service more. Okay. Before that, what would people do with their elderly parents? They would take care of them at home. I mean, look at the history. Largely, the reason nursing homes became so popular in the 60s was because somebody else paid the bill. So we washed our hands of our responsibility as family members, as individuals, and we let it go to the government. Well, I just don't think that's really the best option. I don't think people are taken care of the best way by the government. What the government gives us, they can take away. So what they decide to cover on Medicare or not cover, not approve, do approve, that's, you know, either you get what they give you or you get nothing. And I don't think that's ever going to stop from the government, because there is not an unlimited funding source. Free market solutions is what works in any industry. Healthcare is no different. The government doesn't have unended money, even though they spend like they do. They don't have unlimited money, and their only money they have is to get it from the taxpayers. So when they, only way they can pay for these services is to take from somebody else. And look at how much Medicare costs us now. And we think that increasing Medicare to all would help that. I think that most people would agree. And I still, believe me, I'm an optimist. I still believe that we have some of the best healthcare in the world, maybe the best healthcare in the world. And especially if you look at the free market solutions like direct primary care, when you look at people's experiences with direct primary care and clinics that accept cash and they're not in the traditional health insurance model, patients get better service at a less expensive price. It's unbelievable. The future is direct primary care. I mean, I say direct primary care, but there has to be some specialists involved. Some of those specialists could be like Dr. Keith Smith from Oklahoma Surgery Center that has surgeons from, you know, from orthopedic to gastroenterologist to whatever that have specialty type services. So I think a lot of people would agree that, you know, our system is kind of broken. Well, 65 to 70% of all of our healthcare dollars are in some government program, whether it be Medicaid, whether it be Medicare, whether it be VA. So to think that it's going to get, if you already think it's bad because there's, you know, elderly patients that can't find a doctor that takes Medicare anymore, or, you know, services are not being covered, or things are really expensive, then if you want it to get worse, then we will give more power to the government. So if you think it's already bad and the government has much of the control of it already, then the answer is not more government control, it's less government control.
And on a similar note, what do you say to people that think that having Medicare for all will decrease the cost of healthcare for the average, let's say the average adult, since as you mentioned already, people are paying, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 for a family of four for their health insurance premiums. The argument that I hear them saying is that this Medicare for all plan is going to decrease how much they're having to pay. And I'm curious what your take is on that, since obviously you don't agree with Medicare for all and there's no limit on the cost, as you mentioned. Can you explain more about what your counter argument would be to that?
Yeah. So there might be individuals that at least indirectly or directly, they might pay less, or it might look like that. But, you know, if we're going to fund, I don't remember the numbers that was put out about Medicare, but it was something like about Medicare for all, but it's something like $10 trillion. The money's got to come from somebody. It's got to come from somebody. So even if that individual person, if it costs them less, the government is taking money from somebody so they can have less, so they can have more. Obamacare is a perfect example. So when the Affordable Care Act was passed, there were a lot of people that they were happy about it. They said, well, it was great because you know what? I signed up and I only got to pay 100 and some bucks a month. Well, unfortunately, I had to pay $1,800 a month. My premiums went up. Why? Because they were taking money from some people and giving it to other people. And that's socialism. That's socialized medicine. And the government decides, they pick the winners and losers. The government decides who gets a lower premium. The government decides who gets care too. So all of a sudden you're on these government programs and you like your doctor, but then all of a sudden the government quits paying your doctor very well. So your doctor says, I'm not taking the government programs anymore. You lost your doctor. So then the government decides what doctor you get. When you choose a health insurance company, when you choose a government program, when you sign up for those, you don't get to choose your own doctor. You get to choose the hospital, the lab, the doctor that's in their network. They tell you where to go. So essentially, those doctors that are in that network or those hospitals that are in that network, they don't have to give good service. They don't have to give an inexpensive price or a valuable price. They don't have to because they're already locked into the network. They can give the crappiest service that they want. Perfect example is the Veterans Administration, the VA. It is all over the media how bad of service, how long the wait times the VA is, how people don't get the things they need. That's the ultimate government medicine right there. That's a great example. If you want Medicare for all, that's exactly what it'll be. There will be people not getting care because the people that are in the system, again, this is nothing personal. There are great people, nurses, pharmacists, and doctors inside the VA. It's nothing personal, but they don't have to get better. The system doesn't have to get better because those veterans have to go there. They don't have a choice. So that's what Medicare for All will do. Would it be any less expensive? No. You know, read my book. Read my book, how when Medicare Part D passed, which is the prescription drug coverage of Medicare, read how, you know, within the next year, when after prescription drug passed through Medicare Part D, the prices went up of drugs went up 19%. Of course they did. They could. The pharmaceutical companies raised the prices to the pharmacies and the pharmacies, so they had to pass that cost on to consumers. They had to raise the prices. Why? Because they could. Because somebody else was paying the bill. When I first got out of pharmacy school, there was no Medicare did not cover outpatient drugs, and it was a competitive environment. Walmart was fighting with Rite Aid, was fighting with XYZ company to say, you know, our XYZ drug is, you know, less expensive than Rite Aid's. And there was a, now there's not, you call your average pharmacy and say, hey, what's the price of XYZ drug? And they'll say, well, what insurance do you have? Well, I don't have insurance. Oh yeah. We usually don't know. I mean, we just bill your insurance. And they tell us what to charge. Craziness. I mean, there's no transparency in pricing anymore. You talk about your ER bill, your personal ER bill you had from that agave thorn. You know, you ask them when you're in the ER, you can ask them, well, you know, I want to pay today. Can I get a discount if I pay today? Oh, we don't know what the charges are going to be. We just never know. What do you mean you don't know? You go to a hotel, they know what the charges are. Well, healthcare is way more complicated. Oh, I don't know. You go to a car dealer and you buy a new car. They know exactly what the price is going to be. And a new car is a pretty complicated device. And by the way, they know if you want an extra set of keys or a different set of tires, they know what it's going to cost. So don't give me this stuff you don't know. And by the way, go to the Surgery Center of Oklahoma and, you know, look at their pricing for a total knee surgery or a total hip surgery or XYZ surgery. Their pricing is right there. It's transparent. And when they say $4,592.52, they mean it. That means anesthesia. That means pathology. That means whatever's there, the doctor fee, everything. No surprises. And that's what needs to happen in healthcare. You know, transparency in pricing, free market principles. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I've always been a proponent of being transparent with pricing and, you know, even have, you know, my main initial program for all new patients on my website. So the pricing's there. And, you know, I do discovery calls with patients to make sure that their budget fits the pricing and that it's not going to be a problem for them in that regard. So that there's fail proofs set in place in my clinic to make sure that people kind of understand how much these things are going to cost. However, you know, in Seattle, what we see is a lot of people are taking their corporate insurance and they want to use their insurance still for lab testing and things like that. And then what I say is what you already said is, hey, we don't know how much this is going to cost for you. This could end up being a bill of $1,000 for something that if you just pay it out of pocket, it would be $400. So if you want to save $600 or $700, $800, I recommend paying direct lab pricing. And then we only need to retest what is absolutely necessary in for, you know, 3 to 6 months. And a lot of people still want to use their health insurance, which after that first bill, it can be a rude awakening for them. And usually when people have chronic conditions, they have some brain fog and some, they may have, you know, undiagnosed early onset dementia or something, or just brain fog. And they're like, well, I don't remember you telling me this, that such and such bill was going to be this much money. And frankly, that for a clinic like mine, that can make or break whether that patient continues on with you. So using the direct care system at full capacity can save people hundreds of thousands of dollars in a period of months or a year. And I think a lot of people are strapped because they have a family of four and they're paying upwards around $2,000 a month for health insurance that doesn't cover anything like right. We're talking about. And then they're saying, well, you know, I need actual wellness care. I need actual real health care, not sick care. And I want this and I'm ready. But since I'm paying $2,000 a month for these other things, you know, I only can afford this much out of pocket now. And they put themselves in this kind of financial hard spot when they're actually making great money. So I like what you said about putting that money into a 401k, or if you're, you know, sit down with a financial advisor or accountant and figure out, like, do you need a Roth IRA, or like, where could that money go? An HSA account, or, you know, getting the health share ministries. And maybe we should talk about those next as part of your 6-point solution. But people being smart moving forward, you know, we're in 2020 now, but moving forward into 2021 and further, what are the other options that people can do besides health insurance? Because if we're saying, well, don't get health insurance, I know some of the listeners are going to think, well, isn't that irresponsible for me and my family? And what if we get in a car accident? Or, you know, what about catastrophic care and, you know, my kids? So maybe since you are, you know, a small business owner, you've had this pharmacy for years now, and you also are in the industry as well as having a family, maybe you can speak to what it looks like for you and what you typically see for your other friends or family members who are using health share ministries, what they are, what their benefits are, what you see them covering for people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great question. So one of the things is like I tell people, I talk about this in my book, and you've probably experienced this with patients or friends or family members where, you know, they work for an employer and their employer provides this health insurance for them. And, you know, literally there are people that are scared to leave jobs because of the health insurance. And like, well, I can't go out. I hate my job. I hate my job. I hate it so much, but they provide my health insurance. I can't afford to go anywhere else. Literally what that employer has done, and it's nothing personal, they've created a slave of that employee. And they've used fear tactics. And it's not just the employer. It's the media. It's the government. It's the overall impression of what we think about health insurance. They've created a model where that employer is scared to death to leave because they provide health insurance. And then that employer also, what people have to realize is that employer tells you what is covered and what isn't covered. You might not believe that, but that's totally true. And before I owned my own business, I worked for employers that would buy my health insurance. And I was thinking at the time it was only $500 a month. But it's, you know, obviously it's gotten a lot more expensive. I was thinking, you know, what a ripoff. I would rather have this money myself. I don't use this health insurance. And you know, and of course I tried to negotiate something with the employer back then, and it was way too ahead of their time. I think in the future, that's going to start happening because that's what we need to do is empower people the more people we sell to go to their employer and say, you know, I don't want this one. I want something different. I want you to give me the money. I'll buy my own. You know, is that's when employers will have to change. And eventually what would happen is if everybody went off their insurance and employer's insurance, only the real sick people that access the system all the time would be left, and it would break the system. And that's okay. Now, I know there's people out there that are saying, well, Sean, that's why we need healthy people to pay into the system. I get that. But let's use the car analogy. I have a good driving record. I don't necessarily want to pay a bunch of money for somebody that's had two or three DWIs. It's really no different. Do people want to pay for that? I mean, use a car analogy, okay? So that's what I recommend, is that you go to the employer and you not be a slave to your employer with their health insurance, and you be on a, you take that money, put it in an HSA, or you could buy it and buy something I believe is better. And I call them health sharing ministries, but they're really health sharing programs, because initially they were set up with health sharing ministries. And I was really concerned in my book, but when I was writing my book, that was one of my solutions, because at the time they were all faith-based. I'm trying to think of them. So Christian Healthcare, Samaritan Ministries, MediShare, there was a fourth one at the time, I can't remember. Now there's six or seven, eight of them. The great thing is that in 2018, I believe, New Health, KNEW Health, was founded by James Maskell. And James Maskell is a functional medicine. He used to go around helping doctors set up functional medicine practices. And he realized that the sick care model wasn't working. So it's a lot of what you and I do, Dr. Madera. And he thought, well, why don't we, once the individual mandate of Obamacare was ruled unconstitutional, it allowed New Health to come in. And it's a health sharing program where you pay in a monthly fee a month. And I don't know exactly what New Health's prices are, but the great thing is there's a lot of other options out there. I think New Health is like $500 a month for an entire family. And so very affordable. And what it is these, in these programs or ministries, people pay in every month their premium. And it's not really a premium because it's not health insurance. So they pay in every month a fee, and that fee helps to go to support individuals' claims, whether it be a broken wrist or a, you know, heart attack or whatever. And I get it. Believe me, people don't believe that they can work. But go to their websites. Go to chmministries.org, I believe. CHM Ministries, Christian Healthcare Ministries. .org and look at their stories. There are people that have heart attacks and it gets covered. There are people that have cancer and it gets covered. And oh, by the way, you get to decide the doctor. You get to decide the hospital. There's no preferred providers. You get to decide that. And you know, one of the first things that people see is that, okay, this person had a heart attack. Oh, okay, $250,000 is the bill. And this is not a lie. And if you listen to this podcast far enough now, you might believe it. The first thing they do is, oh, you don't have health insurance. No, I don't have health insurance. I have Christian Healthcare Ministries. Okay, we'll write off $200,000. So now the bill is only $50,000. Unbelievable. Not a surprise. It just tells you what a racket, what a ripoff the insurance system is. So they write off $200,000 and then you're stuck paying $50,000. And what happens is people from all over the world that pay into the system, depending on the ministry or the program, some of them will send you checks directly. Some of them will send you checks from the administration portion of it. But like my son accessed it when he broke his wrist. We saved over $8,000, had way better service. Ended up not getting a pin in his wrist, even though the other doctor wanted to put a pin in it. Why? Because they made more money. That's why. But I found a doctor that specialized in cash, gave us great service to my son, and saved lots of money. And people from all over the world sent us this check to help pay the bills. And it wasn't a lot of money. It was only like $2,200. But in the typical health insurance model, the bill, of course, we couldn't get the bill from the hospital. We couldn't get a price from the hospital when we asked them how much it was going to cost. They didn't know. Yeah. But it was going to be well over $10,000. Right. I know a patient that had the same kind of surgery and it was well over $10,000. So anyway, they work. I know it's almost unbelievable, but it works. And I think it works the way insurance is meant to work.
That's really a relief for me to hear. Cause I know, I mean, you busted open a lot of myths that I think, or reservations people would have about signing up for, you know, either New Health or one of the health share ministries. And, you know, back in the day I was working in collaboration with Liberty Health Share.
Yep.
And they offered my patients, if they signed up with Liberty Health Share, that they would pay a portion of their monthly membership with me. And, you know, it's still an option. But like we already discussed, in corporate America, people think that it's a benefit. And I don't even know if everybody, I mean, if people are listening to this and you work for a corporation, look at how much they're taking out of your paycheck that you're actually paying every month for you or your family or everybody to get. Because I have friends that are married without kids and they have said, no, thanks. I'm not going to sign on with that corporate insurance because it's more expensive than some of these other insurance options. And they're still going with insurance, but point being is it's actually not a deal. You know, I think a lot of people think like this is a screaming deal to pay like $350 to $550 a month. And, you know, with the health share ministry, you could be paying for a couple. I think some of them it's like a married couple, or even if you're not married, I think it's around $250 a month, which I know for, depending on your age for insurance, that could be per person. So, you know, 50% savings per month. You could put that into your retirement fund or your travel fund, or buy the car you've always wanted to own. You know, live the American dream, actually, instead of having to foreclose on a home because right. your medical bills. And, you know, that's one of the main reasons why people have had to give up their homes in the U.S. is medical bills for foreclosing on their home. So, which is like, isn't that like the whole American dream, the White House, the picket fence, and just crushed by having, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical bills. And I've talked to people over the years who've wanted to become patients and they already have too many medical bills from hospital care that, and I'm not throwing conventional medicine under the bus here, but in their cases, they weren't able to get much help from the sick care model. Not a huge surprise to me because those are the patients that I end up seeing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they were left with no solution and a huge bill, which, like going back to the car analogy, if you took your car to the mechanic and they said, well, your bill is 20 grand, but it's not fixed, come pick it up with a tow truck, you would probably get a lawyer. You know, you would say like, screw you, man. Like, we're going to court. We'll see you in court. But that's kind of like what we do all the time. And we just walk away with our tail between our legs and we say, okay, fine. Like, I guess we'll like not do anything with our life, not be able to afford healthy food, not be able to have, you know, 1 to 2 vacations a year, not be able to live our dreams, whatever those look like in this country. And I was trying to play devil's advocate today, but it's really hard for me because I agree with you. And I have family members that go to the VA for decades. I have family members in Canada who have moved and they can't find a primary care doctor. So they have to go back to the city where their primary care doctor is because their primary care doctor in their now small town is not taking any new patients. So when I hear people say, let's take on that model, and I've always argued, well, go to the VA hospital and tell me you want the VA hospital care. And then we can sit down and have a conversation, because I've been watching close family members go to the VA. And, you know, if you don't believe me, go walk in with a family member and see how it goes, and go talk to some veterans and see what kind of care they've been getting. And, you know, some VA hospitals are better than others, but in general, all you have to do is pull up a blog online and see, okay, VA care is subpar. It's government funded. That's what we're going to get with Medicare for All. And direct primary care, a lot of people still don't know what direct primary care is. And you can, you know, there's places in the US like Mississippi where a membership, a monthly membership to direct primary care clinic is $50. And they sit down with you, they go over your medications, they do your suturing if you cut yourself cutting your tomatoes on Friday night. And that's what people should be running towards, because they're going to be able to get the care that we had, you know, 60 years ago or so in the US. And, you know, I always really liked reading kind of like the old books about doctors doing home visits, and yeah, we didn't have as many medicines and tools in our toolbox, but if you read like medical history or even go and watch some old black and white films, the doctor goes to the house, they do, you know, they listen to the heart and lungs, the child has like scarlet fever or something, right? And then they leave and then they come back 3 days later. That's also part of direct primary care. You can have somebody come to your home, or I have mobile phlebotomists that have done blood draws for people at their home before they eat breakfast in their home. So the fasting blood draw isn't a huge headache driving through traffic or, you know, all these things are already available to people. And I think most people have no idea. And they think, okay, as I age, I'm going to have to set aside thousands of dollars, tens of thousand dollars a year for me and my family to be on this sick care insurance that covers like what, one visit a year, some basic stuff like vaccinations, and that's it. And I've sat down, I don't think a lot of people know this, but I was working with another colleague who's a naturopathic doctor now in Bellingham, and he has a direct care clinic, direct primary care clinic up there. And he had one in Southern Oregon too. And we were going to start a clinic in Seattle, direct care, and we were going to hire naturopathic doctors and nurse practitioners and have an integrative direct primary care model and have ideally multiple clinics. And we sat down with a group of angel investors, because there's those groups in Seattle. And the head guy in this meeting said, I am paying $2,000 a month for my kids, my family, and my wife and I to get nothing every year. And this is a person, this is a consumer of insurance, sick care insurance. And he was mad and he was upset, because here's somebody who's, you know, investing in homes, investing in tech startup companies in Seattle, and he's having to shell out $2,000 a month to something that he doesn't want to pay for, that he knows he could be putting into his kids' college funds or, you know, investing in homes. And he said, your idea, I love your idea, but since where things are at, people want to invest in like tech startups because they're going to get a big return on their investment. And there's been other direct primary cares that tried to go on this kind of model of having investors like a tech startup, and it didn't work out. He said, just go with it, just do it. So we didn't do it. We're doing our own things. But that was years ago. And I think people, you know, that was like 2016, I think, and it's 2020 now. People still are in the dark about the possibilities. So that's why I was so excited to get you on the show today to share your book with people, what you're doing for your family, your solutions. What are a couple other solutions that you mentioned in your book without, you know, sharing everything? I want people to still read your book.
So let me back up a little bit, because you said some things that I was talking to my brother yesterday, and you know, you're talking about back in the old days, doctors made home visits, right? So, and I also mentioned that you know, in the 1960s is when nursing homes became really popular, right? And that the government caused that. So what do we know, especially in King County, that has happened over the last week when it comes to nursing homes?
Yeah, coronavirus outbreak in a in care facility in Kirkland, Washington.
Yep. And my doctor was talking, my brother was talking to me about a primary care doctor that's in Moscow, Idaho. And you know what he's doing? So to help, he's doing home visits. Think about that. You want to stop the spread of coronavirus? The government doesn't need to make their demands. Private individuals in the free market will. That doctor was not told by the government to have to do that. He did it himself. Brilliant. Just like you're talking about. Blood draws, the government didn't tell you that you had to have a phlebotomist that went and seen the patient at home. You made it more convenient for the patient. I mean, you know, there again, free market solutions will solve all these problems. I say all's a powerful word, but will solve a lot of problems. In fact, the government creates a lot of these problems. And I know that's a hot topic right now, but I believe in that, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, a patient, like the type of patients that I work with, usually it doesn't matter where they are, Montana or Seattle, they're so busy with work and family and all the stuff in between and, you know, kids practices on weekends and the to-dos, you know, there's no such thing as like a weekend anymore, it seems like. So for them to find time to do a fasting blood draw, drive to a blood draw center for LabCorp, Quest Diagnostics, the main conventional blood centers in the U.S., is like asking them to get both their toes ripped off. It's very challenging to fit right. in your schedule. They don't do it. You know, it takes months and it's like, whoa, guys, you're like, hey, yeah. you know, we need to check yeah. up on these things or else you can't get the, you know, testosterone again. So
yeah,
I mean, it's just simple things. If I can have someone come to my house or come to my work and do the blood draw for me and I don't have to change anything, but just not eat until they leave, no big deal, right?
Right, right.
And
free market solution.
Yeah, free market solution. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that. And, you know, hopefully there'll be even more innovation as time goes on, because I think it, you know, it took like a pandemic for people to wake up and wash their hands and not cough in people's face right now. And I'm not making light of this situation, but you know, it takes things that are huge to wake up big groups of people, it seems like, through history. So hopefully, you know, through the next year, people can start waking up and paying attention, like, okay, you know, let's just look at how much money we spent in 2019 and 2018 on our health insurance.
Yeah.
You know, and then did we use it? And how much did we have to pay out with those medical bills later? I don't think people are doing their kind of like fiscal sick care coverage, like how much are you paying for that every year?
Yeah. And that's why I'm glad you had me on, and I'm glad you talk about these things, because one of the reasons I wrote a book, and it's one of the reasons I have a radio show, is to educate patients about that. And you know, I'm not making light of the coronavirus issue either, and you know, one person dying, if it's your family member or relative or, you know, a friend, is too many. I get that. But also, I think one thing that this should remind us of is that in general, I know there are exceptions to that rule, but in general, we need to have a healthy immune system, and that will prevent us, that will save us from a lot of diseases. So having a good, healthy body in the first place will prevent a lot of problems. So the strong, you know, one of the last step solutions that I have, and this is a strong one, and this is probably the one that's most political, but we have to get government out of healthcare. And I'm not super optimistic that that's ever going to completely happen. I'm just not. But I think that's what's caused a lot of the problems. But that doesn't mean we should give up on it and be apathetic, okay? And I talked with one of my congressmen years ago, and I told him that, well, he says, well, Medicare is here to stay. We can't repeal Medicare. And I said, I think it's a socialized medicine. I think it's, you know, it's hurting our country. It's hurting people. I don't like the government medicine. I think it's unconstitutional also. There is nowhere in the United States Constitution where the government, the federal government, has the power to give us health care. Please, anybody listening to this podcast, if you can find that, send it to me, okay? And I'm not gonna accept the general welfare clause, you know, that Congress's job is to take care of the general welfare of the people. General welfare of the people does not mean take from somebody, i.e. the taxpayers that are paying into a system, and give it to somebody else. Okay. That is not general welfare. So I'm not buying that. So one of the solutions is repeal Medicare, repeal the Social Security Act. I know that sounds freaking drastic, but let's think about this. We have a great example in United States history, and I love it. And I don't think this was by happenstance. I'm so glad this happened. And this is what I told him. I'm like, well, we repealed prohibition. Remember, 100 years ago, alcohol was illegal. We look back on that and we think, how freaking crazy is that? Alcohol was illegal 100 years ago. And guess what? Enough people stood up and says, you know what? This is not right. We want to be able to drink what we want. And we repealed it. So why can't we repeal something as big as Medicare and Social Security? It's bankrupting us, people. And it's you know, the government is using it. They're not saving it for us later. They are spending it right now. They are, in fact, they've overspent. I mean, you know, our country is in deep trouble when it comes to finances. We are deeply, deeply, deeply in debt. And I don't know if we can get out of it. I want to be optimistic, so I'm not apathetic. That's why I'm doing these things. But that's the big one is, you know, and don't let when your congressman tells you we can't do it, tell him we repealed prohibition. That was a pretty big one. And you just look at some of the things when enough people talk. A good example of prohibition. Look at marijuana. I never thought in my lifetime that marijuana would be legal again. And you know what? I'm guessing. Now, remember, it's legal in some of the states. It is still illegal federally, people. It is still illegal federally, period. It is. I never thought in my lifetime that marijuana would be legally federally, but I honestly think in the next 5 years it might be. And why? Because enough people stood up and spoke. It's like, you know what? This is wrong. You guys are telling us what to put in our bodies. You did it with alcohol 100 years ago. It didn't work. You're doing it with marijuana now. It didn't work. So let's get rid of this law. Medicare is no different. You know, if enough people stand up and says, I'm fed up with this, I want to pick my own health care, I want the government out of it, we can do it. So that's the big one.
Yeah, those are two big ones. I mean, I'm not steeped in politics as much as you are in all this, but I do know, and I think most people are aware that Social Security has failed. I mean, as you say, it's not, we're paying into it for other people. And it's broken, just like this whole sick care system is broken. And we do know that chronic diseases are on course to bankrupt this country, just chronic diseases alone. And you mentioned something in your book about the government treating the U.S. population like it's children that can't take care of themselves. And I mean, what we're kind of seeing is this kind of victim, and I mentioned it briefly in the beginning today of this podcast, this victim savior complex where insurance will save me, or the doctors in the hospital will save me, or my surgeon will save me, or multiple specialists will save me. And the lack of self-responsibility. And, you know, now we know 80% of cardiovascular disease, the number one killer, is not genetic, it's lifestyle. So even if you have genetics, you can improve those genetics by doing lifestyle things and eating differently, right, and exercising differently. And, you know, there's research on this to back this up. It's not something I came up with. But basically, you know, something that I've wondered, because I'm not a public health scientist or PhD or master's degree in public health, but something I've wondered is at this point, since the sickest people in the U.S. are on course to increase in number and then bankrupt the country. And if we keep having these programs that are like, oh, we'll take care of you, we'll take care of you, there's nowhere to go but exponential, you know, expenditure. And you charted this in your book that we're spending more and more and more each year and each decade and half decade. And something I've wondered is, you know, are these people even healthy enough to be helped? Because if, you know, somebody needs five specialists, and in what you've talked about, one of the things you've talked about is medical necessity. Like, does somebody actually need X procedure? And when insurance is in play, they decide what is medically necessary instead of the doctor and the patient, or the doctor and the patient's family with the patient. But what we're seeing is these people are so sick, and then insurance is deciding, well, yeah, you need these procedures. And I think if we had a society that said, whoa, hey, if I don't take care of myself, I could spend $2 million in 5 years on procedures and all this stuff, because nobody's coming to save me if I need like 8 heart surgeries or et cetera, barring, you know, an emergency. And, you know, what we see is that everybody's like, well, someone else will cover it. So I'm wondering how you would define medical necessity.
Well, there again, I think the free market will decide it. So it's no different than any other commodity that we have. Let's give a grocery store analogy. And I talk about this grocery store analogy in my book. And it wasn't original to me. It was Dinesh D'Souza. So let's say we shop at the grocery store like we go to, what, like we have our healthcare. Okay. Like most of us have healthcare. If we have traditional health insurance, government program, private. And by the way, there's no such thing as private health insurance anymore. And I talk about this in my book. It is so heavily mandated on what to cover and at how much to cover it, what the allowable is, all that, by the government. There is no such thing as private health insurance. It is government insurance. If you have traditional health insurance, whether you call it government or private, it is all government, because the government tells them what they can and can't cover, period. That's one of the reasons it's so expensive, because there's things on there that, you know, have to be covered. So let's say you go to the grocery store and you know, you've got your basket, you're shopping, you're running down the aisle and you're like, well, wait a minute. I don't need this food. I don't need this stuff, but I don't have to pay. I'm going to just fill my cart up. You start filling your cart up with unnecessary food. Doesn't matter. You're not paying for it. Serious. Here's the clincher. You get to the checkout. You get to the checkout. The grocery store owner realizes, oh, wow. This person doesn't have to pay for this. I can charge whatever I want. There we go. The grocery store clerk, owner, whatever, is an accessory to the crime. And that's what I believe about healthcare providers that are billing insurance still. Nothing personal, people. I get it. Nothing personal. But I honestly believe that. So we got to get out of that. So if the person had skin in the game, like when they were buying a car, like when they were buying their own groceries, like they, you know, like they usually do, they would more likely buy only necessity items that they had to pay for. And if they decided to pay for something, buy something that they didn't really get good use out of, that might make them think about their choices in the future. Why, in my opinion, why do we have a complete huge obesity problem in this nation, which is creating all kinds of problems, including the number one killer of Americans is cardiovascular disease, which is the biggest reason for that is obesity, okay? Do you think people would have a bigger reason to be healthy if they had to pay for all that sick care themselves? Do you think they would be on high blood pressure medications? Do you think they'd be on high cholesterol medications? Or do you think they would lose weight and take better care of themselves? I think it's a no-brainer. In the free market, they would take care of themselves. But it when it costs them nothing, there's no consequences for them. Even though indirectly later on, it costs you, well, your life, literally. And not just mortality, but morbidity. You can't work as hard if you're not healthy. If you're overweight, you can't work as hard. You can't be as productive. I mean, those are facts. Those are not just, you know, that's not an opinion. Those are facts. And remember, the best health insurance that we have is not some policy that we can buy. It's how we take care of ourselves, period. That's the best health insurance we have.
Yeah, does that help? I agree with that. I mean, you can't argue. I can't argue with that at all. And I think hopefully the people listening are taking this to heart. And, you know, we're always working with individuals, and we have a functional medicine health coach here at the clinic working with people around education. And that's what, you know, this podcast is here for. And that's what your show is there for. So, you know, don't be a victim. And arm yourself with the facts and take action. I mean, we can't just have knowledge and not take action, because then it's just a bunch of theories and ideas and facts swimming around in our brain. So take action on this. Look into HealthShare Ministries, get Sean's book. And hopefully this has been motivating to some people, like, if you're already taking one medication, the probability as you age in the United States, if you don't change things about your health that are changeable now before it's too late, is that you're going to be taking more medications. And then the higher risk of drug-drug interactions and all kinds of stuff goes up. And you want to be able to be available to your friends and family, most likely. And that's what I hear from my patients is, hey, you know, I want to watch my kids graduate from college or get married. I want to walk my daughter down the aisle if they're a dad, or, you know, show up to the big events in life. And, you know, we can't show up to those big events if we're sick. But at the same time, I think people may be motivated by the financials, but other people may be motivated more by the emotional aspect. And, you know, Alzheimer's disease is on the rise, dementia is on the rise, cardiovascular disease, number one killer, as we already mentioned, and other things. And that's where most people are headed if they don't take direct steps now that are actionable. And the emotional debt on a family, when you go and visit a family member and you say, hey, you know, good to see you again, grandma, grandpa, whatever, and they don't remember your name or where you live, or they ask you to tell them a story you've told them the last time you visited a week or a month ago. And I've had those experiences, and it's hard. It's hard to watch that happen with your own family and feel powerless. But if you can do things now, and we know diabetes, type 3 diabetes is dementia. So that's a connection for you again, folks, and the whole like cardiometabolic disease family of illnesses. And these are lifestyle conditions. These are not things that are, you know, cured by, could get in trouble by saying that, but they're not cured by medication. Their symptoms are managed by medications to keep people alive. So, and that's why we call it sick care medicine versus actual true healthcare medicine or functional medicine or natural medicine. Obviously these are our opinions. And you know, if you do need conventional Medicare, please get conventional Medicare. Don't hurt yourself. Or put yourself in harm's way. But case in point, you can take this information, do your research, figure out how you can save money next year by applying the things that Sean's talking about today in his book and everything else. As far as a release date for the audio version of your book or the hard copy, do you have an idea? Will that be done by the end of 2020, or do you have a release date in mind?
Yeah, I don't have a hard release date, but my goal is to get a hard copy and an audio copy done by the end of the year. Audio copy, the recording's almost done. I'm actually doing it with my voice because some people said that – I had a few people say that, you know, it's got to be your voice. You wrote the book. So, and that's been a fun process too. So, yeah, so I'm hoping by the end – my goal is by the end of the year. You know, it's a process for me. It's the first book I've ever written. So, you know, I'm learning as I go and, you know, trying to surround myself with the right people. And I just have a wonderful team to help me do it. So I wanted to hit on something really quick too. And you kind of mentioned it, but I wanted to, cause sounds like it might be a hot button with you too, when it comes to genetics. And we have so many people that say, well, you know what? I've got a genetic history of cardiac disease, my mom and my dad. And then, you know what? I've got some kind of gene that I, you know, I have a cardiovascular risk or whatever. And we can't change genetics, but we can change the way our genes are expressed. And those are just facts. So don't just give yourself a death wish and say, oh, I can't change it. You can, you know, so.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. Hopefully that empowers people more. And I think one of the analogies that I've been told over and over again is, you know, genetics are the loaded gun, and then our environment and our lifestyle pull that trigger. So,
right. Great analogy. I love it. I'm going to use that again, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please do. Please do. I used it from somebody else, so it's not mine. But it's, you know, it's sitting there. It's ready to fire off. And I have genetics of coronary artery disease and family members who have had that. And, you know, my goal is to not have that as I age. So, right. You know, there's something called inflammaging. So as you age, if you don't take care of yourself, your inflammation rates add to the list of conditions you have in your problem list when you go and see your doctor. So, you know, do your best to keep that list as short as possible. And then look at the things we talked about, the health share ministries, like, you know, go call them now and say, like, what are you guys going to cover for me and my family, or me and my wife, or me and my husband? And figure those things out, because, you know, maybe you can afford the house that you want to have, or the car you want to have now, and or the treatments that you want to have from a doctor who is on those plans. Well, Sean, this has been awesome. Thanks for your time. I know you're busy and you're traveling around, and you know, have a busy life and your business that you're running as well. So thanks so much for sharing your time and your knowledge and all things with us today. Everybody, you can find Sean and follow him on social media, on YouTube. So at Moses Lake Professional Pharmacy, and Health Solutions with Sean and Janet Needham podcast. And you also can get his book, Sickened. And the subtitle of Sickened is How the Government Ruined Healthcare and How to Fix It. Again, thanks everybody for listening, and share this podcast with your friends and family, and everybody follow Sean Needham and get his book. Now here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.